From WAMC in Albany, this is the Legislative Gazette, a weekly magazine about New York State government and politics. Your host is David Gustina, with political commentary by Dr. Alan Shartok, political scientist and professor emeritus at the University at Albany. Statewide distribution for the Legislative Gazette is made possible by New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org.
Coming up this week, New York U.S. Senator Kirsten Gillibrand announces a run for president in 2020. Our political observer Alan Shartok shares his thoughts on that and on the governor's State of the State address and budget proposal. An environmentalist prays a proposed bottle bill expansion and plastic bag ban, but want to ensure it goes far enough. Those stories and more on the Legislative Gazette. New York U.S. Senator Kirsten Gillibrand announced her intention to run for president this week. Hours after her appearance on The Late Show with Stephen Colbert, the Democrat returned to her native capital region for her first campaign event. The Legislative Gazette's Lucas Willard was there.
On a chilly January morning at a roadside diner she called her favorite, Senator Kirsten Gillibrand made her White House pitch.
I'm going to run for president of the United States because as a young mom, I will fight for your children as hard as I would fight for my own.
The 52-year-old Democrat, who was easily reelected to a second full term in November, stood outside the Country View Diner, located, as she put it, a stone's throw from her Brunswick home. Joined by her two sons, mother and husband, Gillibrand said she stood on the shoulders of generations of Americans who have fought to make the country better.
So whether we fought to abolish slavery, or we fought for suffrage, or whether we fought for workers' rights and unions' rights, or whether we fought for LGBT equality, or whether we fight today to make sure every child can breathe clean air and drink clean water, those are the fights of this country.
Gillibrand said she would fight for health care for all, oppose corruption in Washington, and refuse PAC money. During her kickoff event, she criticized the Republican president, also a New Yorker, as a divider.
President Trump has chosen to tear this country apart against all racial lines, all religious lines, every division, every line you can find, and that is what we have to fight against.
Now a high-profile progressive in the Senate, Gillibrand first entered Congress in 2007 as a moderate upstate Democrat. She was appointed to the Senate 2 years later when Hillary Clinton became Secretary of State. Conversations started swirling about whether she would run for president during her 2018 campaign for re-election. She's already facing heat from Republicans who are pointing out that Gillibrand said she would serve her full 6-year term when asked directly during a televised debate. In a statement emailed before Gillibrand's televised announcement Tuesday night, New York State Republican Committee Chair Ed Cox accused her of being self-serving and added, "If she treats her current constituents with such disrespect, we shudder to think what she'd do to the nation." Facing reporters outside the diner, Gillibrand was asked when she changed her mind.
So as I said then, I was solely focused on winning our midterms, creating transparency and accountability over this White House, to have some level of oversight, and to continue to serve New Yorkers. And I feel I will continue to do that. But this sense of urgency has only grown in me, and I wanted to talk to my family.
Supporters were gathered inside the diner to greet the senator, including local resident Elaine Bartley. She sees Gillibrand as perfectly suited for the role of president.
She is absolutely fearless, and she is very principled. She will stand up for what she believes in.
With a year to go before the first votes are cast in the Democratic primaries, Gillibrand is joining what is expected to become a crowded field of presidential hopefuls, including several fellow senators. Reporting from Brunswick,
for the Legislative Gazette, I'm Lucas Willard.
The New York State Legislature has been more active during the first few days of the session than it has in many years. As the Legislative Gazette's Karen DeWitt reports, it's a big contrast from recent years when it was the governor who took the lead in setting the agenda.
On Monday, both houses of the legislature got together and approved matching bills to expand voting in the state beyond just Election Day to 11 full days.
I vote yes, Madam President. Thank you.
On Tuesday, they extended rights in employment and housing to transgender New Yorkers. The bills are now being sent to the governor to sign or veto. According to the textbooks, that's the way government is supposed to work. The legislature writes and passes bills. The governor decides whether or not to approve them. But in Albany, that system has been subverted for decades, as the governor has taken the lead role in most major items. During Governor Cuomo's first two terms in office, when the Senate and Assembly were led by different parties, the governor had more power to set the agenda. He included numerous policy items in his budget that were not necessarily related to the spending plan. And he used private meetings restricted to majority party legislative leaders to finalize agreements. They were often hastily voted on by rank-and-file members late at night. Blair Horner, with the Government Reform Group, New York Public Interest Research Group, has been watching events in Albany for decades. He says now that both houses are led by Democrats, senators and assembly members are able to act on bills that in some cases have been in print for years, but did not have enough votes in the GOP-led Senate to pass.
Democrats, you know, they are singing from the same song sheet and going first. Typically, it's the governor who leads the parade on policy issues and often through the budget.
Cuomo continued the practice of putting unrelated policy items into his budget plan when he released it on Tuesday. He advocated for stricter gun laws, a measure to allow victims of childhood sexual abuse their day in court, as well as more election reforms.
Why not make Election Day a holiday and give them the time to come out and actually vote?
Cuomo first broached the idea of an Election Day holiday in his inaugural address on January 1st. But the newly empowered Democrats in the legislature are showing some independence from the governor. Senate Majority Leader Andrea Stewart-Cousins was asked why the governor's proposal to make Election Day a holiday was not part of the legislature's voter expansion package. Senator Stewart-Cousins said lawmakers want to act first to clear a backlog of bills that have already been more thoroughly examined.
We are a deliberative body, and with new proposals that come in, we need to be able to vet them.
Assembly Speaker Carl Hastie, who's also a Democrat, says maybe there's no longer a need for the governor to put so many unrelated policy issues into the budget.
To be fair, there were times I was happy that he did because I knew if they were standalone items, the Senate Republicans probably would never have done them.
He says it's better now to take the issues one by one.
Because the Assembly and Senate, if we come to agreement on items, we'll just continue to pass them and negotiate the budget with the governor as well.
Even though one party is now in charge of the governor's office and the legislature, there's some signs of competition between the two. Speaker Hastie pointed out on Twitter during the governor's inaugural address that many of Cuomo's proposals have already been approved in the Assembly. And the governor upped the stakes on some issues that were previously agreed upon by Democrats. After the legislature announced plans to pass bills on January 22nd, codifying the abortion rights in the U.S. Supreme Court decision Roe v. Wade into law, Cuomo said in his budget message that he'd like to go one step further and establish the abortion rights into the state's constitution. Horner with NYPERG says for supporters of these issues, the rivalry can only be a benefit.
The fact that the legislature and the governor's office may be looking to one-up each other is probably a good thing for the public.
He says the state budget, with all of the decisions about spending and taxes, will be the real test, though, of whether old patterns are broken at the Capitol. In Albany, I'm Karen DeWitt.
You are listening to the Legislative Gazette, a program about New York State government and politics. I'm David Gustina. Joining us now, Legislative Gazette political observer Alan Chartok. Well, Alan, the governor delivered his State of the State address and budget proposal this week.
It seeks to legalize adult use of marijuana, hikes education spending by $956 million, seeks to codify aspects of the Federal Affordable Care Act into state law while adhering to a 2% cap on year-over-year state spending. It would also close a $3.1 billion budget deficit. Your thoughts on the governor's speech yesterday?
I thought it was a very good speech. Now, look, I've been critical of this governor. We all know it. I'm not going to pretend that that's not true. When he's been coming on the air, asking to be on our air, and we have asked him the toughest questions we possibly can. But I can tell you this. This was one hell of a speech. It was a clarion call to those people in this country who are concerned about Donald Trump. And he made it clear that New York wasn't going to sit back and take a bunch of baloney from the president and that we would be there as a state. Look, I've never been one who thought that his rhetoric matched that of his father. But yesterday it was clearly something. The people in the legislature, many of whom don't like him, let's face it, were in rapture, cheering at every moment. His rhetoric was unbelievable. Let me say this was his best effort that I have ever heard. And compared with past years in which he did airplanes and Shelley Silver and this one and that one and kidding around, this was something very different. This was Rooseveltian. It was a superb effort. It was a 10 out of 10.
What about Kirsten Gillibrand in New York City on Stephen Colbert's show making her announcement that she's running for president?
Well, she's running for president. So is a group of people that is getting so big you won't be able to fit them in a room. She might be a vice presidential candidate. I don't see her as a presidential candidate, to tell you the truth. The real question is, if Cuomo wants either the vice presidency or the presidency, Gillibrand's got to get out of the way. There's no question. You can't have two New Yorkers ballot. And when I heard Cuomo, I said, he may say that he is going to serve out his full term, but this was a presidential speech, I'll tell you now.
Of course, you asked Cuomo about some groups. You thought he should put more money into education funding. He began to talk about how that was understandable, that everybody wants money when it comes to the budget process.
Well, he's been saying that for years, and he's not all wrong about that. Everybody does, but there are rights and there are wrongs. You know, the tradition in New York State is, for all governors, is you put some money in for education. They come back and they fight with you, particularly the Senate and the Assembly, both now in Democratic hands and pro-education, and they will fight for more money for their districts. And they are under tremendous pressure. Now, what's interesting about what the governor said is, we've been giving all this money, and when they say, we need more money for our school districts, especially the poor districts, we give it to them, but it doesn't reach the people who are most in need. It reaches their best schools and their best students and their richest students, and we have to figure out a formula here in which the money goes to those kids, and those are the people we got to get to. Now, that is a little bit of a gutsy move. I'll tell you that, David, because the Scarsdales and the others have tremendous clout. They are now represented in many cases by Democrats in the state Senate. So what he's doing is saying, okay, you're going to get the money, but we want a formula that it insists a way of getting that money to the poorest kids in these school districts. And those are not the people who generally have political power. And so it's going to be interesting to see how it works out.
Speaking of the number of ethics reforms proposals, including now the governor outlining lobbying reform, Alan, he wants to strengthen the regulations for lobbyists, including new reporting requirements for minimum disclosures set at $500, a code of conduct for those who seek to influence public policy, and a ban on political consultants from lobbying officials they helped elect, not to mention they're doing away with the LLC loophole.
Well, that's very good. No question. I mean, it's all progressive. It's where we need to be, but it's not enough. I hear very little mention of the idea of the outside income, which is crucial to this, saying what the United States Congress does is what the state legislature should do, which is you can't make more than 15% of your newly raised salary unless you know the so-called Controllers Commission, a name I'm giving it because it's former and older controllers. Those legislators think they got double-crossed. I am sure of that. They thought that this was going to be just a raise and no requirements. Well, I think that that is going to be the crucial one. And I hope, I just hope that they don't give up on that one, because I think when people want to go to their senator, who is also a lawyer, they know what they're doing. You know, this guy's got extra clout, so I'm going to go to him as opposed to somebody who may be on the outside. And by the way, there are lots of hims and hers right now.
The other discussion you've been having with the governor has been regarding transportation and infrastructure in New York City, specifically who runs the MTA.
Well, I had fun with the governor. I have to admit that, you know, he was, what's the right word, bitching about the idea that the control of the MTA is in too many hands, and basically he wants to run it. Give it to me. I said, well, okay, now, if that's true, what about the Board of Regents in New York City? The mayor got control of the schools and took it away from this widespread group. Why aren't you talking about that, too? Why don't you take it? He said, well, that's a good point, doctor, he said to me, but you can only do so much in each year. And that's basically his position. If you are, in fact, going to take power away from any group, why not the regents? And then you could be held responsible rather than their being held responsible for failures.
Legislative Gazette political observer Alan Chartok. Listening to the Legislative Gazette, a program about New York State government and politics. I'm David Gustina. Well, just ahead of his State of the State and budget address this week, Governor Cuomo announced that a bottle bill expansion and plastic bag ban will be included in the 2019 budget. Environmentalists praise the move but want to ensure it goes far enough, while at least one industry group is concerned the bag ban could go too far. The Legislative Gazette's Allison Dunn has more.
In his Sunday announcement, Governor Cuomo said he is advancing what he calls common sense legislation to ban single-use plastic bags statewide. The Democrat addressed the reasons while speaking with WAMC's Alan Chartok on the roundtable Monday.
We can provide renewable bags. We can do it without cost. It's expensive, ugly, dangerous, ruins the environment, and it's purely unnecessary.
Former EPA Regional Administrator Judith Enck is visiting professor at Bennington College.
Well, is it too corny to say it's a mixed bag? Because it is. I applaud the governor for proposing to ban plastic bags. That is very much needed in New York State because of the growing problem of plastic bag litter, much of it often getting into our rivers and ultimately the ocean. It's really encouraging to see that, but unfortunately, the governor missed a really important opportunity to promote sustainability by not having a fee proposed on paper bags.
Enck, a WAMC contributor, says charging this fee encourages consumers to bring their own bags. She says there are 331 local bag laws on the books across the U.S. and feels the best are the hybrid bans, such as the one signed in Ulster County in October. It includes a provision to exempt low-income families from paying the 5 cents for each recyclable paper bag provided to customers. About 1 month later, Dutchess County legislators approved a plastic bag ban, but without the paper bag fee. Liz Moran is Environmental Policy Director with the New York Public Interest Research Group.
We're excited about the governor's announcement, but we have to see what he ultimately proposes. A plastic bag ban with a fee will be what's best for the environment. It'll make sure that we cut back on paper, which has a huge carbon footprint. It'll be effective in educating the public that they need to bring their reusable bags as well.
That paper bag footprint is one reason Michael Durant is concerned about the proposal. He is president and CEO of the Food Industry Alliance of New York State.
If you had the same amount of plastic bags versus paper bags, it takes seven more trucks per one truck to transport paper bags over plastic. So there's a carbon footprint not only in making paper, but also in transporting paper, storing paper. So we feel that just banning plastic bags and not addressing paper and not, you know, working with the industry to promote the utilization of reusable bags will cause any positive environmental impact by the governor's proposal to be short-sighted and to fall short.
Meantime, the governor proposes expanding the bottle bill to make most non-alcoholic beverage containers eligible for 5-cent redemption, including those for sports drinks, energy drinks, fruit and vegetable beverages, and ready-to-drink teas and coffee, with some exceptions, including for milk and dietary supplements. A spokesman for the American Beverage Association says in part, quote, America's beverage companies are working together to protect the environment, and we look forward to continuing to work with Governor Cuomo and his administration to improve access to recycling, expand litter recovery efforts, and reduce the amount of plastic in our containers, end quote. Judith Enck worked on the original bottle bill in 1982 and wants to see the bill include more than this latest proposal.
And now is the time to update the 1982 law with deposits on non-carbonated beverages. And I would say the governor could go even a little further and require deposits on liquor bottles, on wine bottles, and on hard cider.
Cuomo says he will direct the Department of Environmental Conservation to conduct a study in consultation with industry participants and retailers on how the bottle bill could be further expanded to include wine and liquor bottles.
For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Allison Dunn.
You are listening to the Legislative Gazette, a program about New York State government and politics. I'm David Gostina. Officials say the Northeast is experiencing an alarming shortage of the shingles vaccine that, left unsolved, could spread the painful and harmful virus to many this winter. The Legislative Gazette's Dave Lucas reports.
The Centers for Disease Control and Prevention says that over a lifetime, one in three people will develop shingles, a viral infection that causes a painful rash all over the body. Many people had chickenpox when they were children. After a person recovers from chickenpox, the virus remains dormant in the body. It can reactivate years later, causing shingles. Until recently, Zostavax was the vaccine of choice. It reduced the risk of shingles by 51%. Then along came Shingrix, shown to be more than 90% effective. The vaccine is recommended for those 50 and older, and patients typically receive two doses separated by 2 to 6 months. New York State Assemblyman John McDonald, who owns and operates Mara's Pharmacy in Cohoes, says it's on high demand nationwide.
I can tell you candidly that since October, we have not been able to receive any vaccine. And that is consistent for all pharmacies. There were a few pharmacies that had an existing stock that they've worn through. So we're at a situation now where patients have been given their first dose and aren't able to get their second dose within the required time frame, which is 4 to 6 months after the first dose. So it's becoming a major problem.
McDonald says the FDA is doing its best to monitor the situation, and the manufacturer has been keeping in touch with pharmacies. He adds Shingrix is usually dispensed at no cost to the patient. New York State Health Department spokesperson Aaron Silk.
As the demand for the new shingles vaccine remains high, the State Department of Health is monitoring the situation closely and is in regular communication with the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. The department recommends New Yorkers having trouble locating a vaccine visit vaccinefinder.org to locate a provider or pharmacy that has the vaccine available. If necessary, the department also recommends people put their name on a wait list if their provider or pharmacy offers one.
McDonald notes there's a long wait list at Mara's.
We are ordering every single day of the year, no matter if it's a weekday or weekend, with the hope that we'll be able to receive a supply. But my concern is that back in October, I was assured sometime by December this would be addressed. And here we are in the middle of January, and we're still waiting for supply. And it's not just our pharmacy, it's every pharmacy.
There's more at WAMC.org.
For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Dave Lucas.
And that about does it for this week's show. We had help from the New York State Public Radio Network. For copies, call 1-800-323-9262. That's 1-800-323-9262. Ask for program number 1903 or just listen or podcast on the web at WAMC.org. And join us again next week at this same time for more news on New York State government and politics. For the Legislative Gazette, I'm David Gostina.
Statewide distribution for the Legislative Gazette is made possible by New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org.